You're listening to KKUP Cupertino, 91.5 FM, KKUP Cupertino. It's just after 11 p.m. It's time for the Vibrational Voyage program. Nice and clear around here tonight. I don't know if you've had a chance to check out the sky. Orion's up so beautifully over in the southwest. And so I like that view when the belt, it's a little bit past it at this point, but the belt actually gets horizontal in the sky. And then Rigel and Betelgeuse are straight up and down, perpendicular to the belt. To me, that position seems very interesting and intriguing. Because right above there, then, the line between Rigel through the belt and through Betelgeuse goes up and intersects with the plane of the ecliptic in Gemini. And, of course, anytime any planets come through there, it creates a formation with those stars. It's very interesting and very lovely, and there have been some really wonderful events near there. That's actually where the southern solstice, that's where the moon was during the southern solstice. It's actually the, I guess you'd say, the summer or northern solstice point right there above Orion near Gemini. So, here we are. We're getting close to the equinox. You know, there's, to me, it seems even more interesting the further we get toward the spring. We have the sun going to be together exactly with Uranus at spring equinox. So on the, it's a Sunday, actually, March 20th, there'll be a celestial alignment, spring equinox sun, so the sun entering Aries, and Uranus in the first degree of Aries. I think it'll be about a half a degree from exact. So that means the sun will very quickly, in less than a day, will move to an exact alignment with Uranus along the zodiac. So that will be kind of interesting. It's kind of a a bit of a synergy there for springtime. Uranus does seem very much like a springtime energy, too, the way new discoveries, new revelations are favored with Uranus. But as you've heard in many places, certainly on this program as well, Uranus has a lot to do with change, and even radical change, revolutionary change, transformation. And we're actually heading into a time that has that quality in abundance, because right now Jupiter is making a square with Pluto. It's almost exact, and it's moving up. So that square is happening. And then starting next year, in 2012, Uranus will have its first square with Pluto. This Pluto-Uranus cycle started in 1965, and we're having the first square, the first 90-degree angle between Pluto and Uranus. The very first one will happen in 2012, and then that'll go on and off for several years. We'll have Uranus squaring Pluto between 2012 and about 2015. We'll be doing exact squares with Pluto. So we are not through with this stuff. In some ways, it's only getting more energetic. So watching what's going on and watching what's happening in the sky, I certainly don't have the total picture at any moment of anything. But it is interesting the resonance that can be found between our own direct experiences and the patterns that we see. And of course, you know, astrological patterns, that's only one type of pattern. What we're really talking about is something that is showing up everywhere. It's a resonance that shows up in all types of expressions. And probably each one of us, given the opportunity, could reflect on all sorts of strange resonances and alignments that are happening in their own experience. Something interesting that I found that I'm going to play for you tonight is a recording of Father Charlie Moore, someone who was with us for many, many years, doing all sorts of wonderful work. He was the DA for Santa Cruz many years ago, and then he became a Catholic priest, and then served in the community as a priest. And ultimately, when he retired, he still served in his own wonderful and peculiar way. And there's probably many people who might be hearing my voice tonight that are friends and even loved ones and family of Father Charlie, because he had a great big community and a great big heart. And so much so, his life still seems to resonate here, certainly in the joy I feel when I listen to his descriptions. Father Charlie, one of the comments I heard him make a couple times was that when he would get into a discussion on subjects about things related to transformation and the deeper meaning of things, not just the obvious and more superficial interpretations of things. He loved language. He said that when he would get on a discussion about these things, he would actually feel energized. And as long as he was kind of, you know, on the subject, he would kind of get a big buildup in his energy, kind of be on the roll with that. And I think you can kind of sense it in certainly the connections that he makes in the things that he shares, the insights, the synergy. So I hope you enjoy this tonight. I'm going to give you a little bit just to start off here, and then I'll be back to talk with you a little bit more. And this is a nice long one, so I can imagine this is going to stretch into next week as well. All right, Father Charlie Moore.
Anyway, I'd like to announce that Father Charlie is ready to give his talk and his full presentation. So, are you ready? Yes.
Namaste. Namaste. I would like to say that the human psyche is a better word than soul. Yes? Carl Jung uses that word for soul, psyche. Now, the psyche is the structure of the invisible you. The focus of the invisible you. Your statement of Tezcatlipoca, I've been a follower of Tezcatlipoca the Jaguar for a very long time, and his companion, Quetzalcoatl. Yes. And Quetzalcoatl is always shown dancing before Tezcatlipoca, who sits quietly, the smoking mirror. And Tezcatlipoca spins, and rather, Quetzalcoatl spins and dances, the plumed serpent. Yeah? But this tradition is not only familiar to the Americas, as we call them, Turtle Island actually, but rather to all the world. There's an island in the middle of the Irish Sea, right in the middle, called on the map the Isle of Man. Actually, its name is yes?
Manx.
Manx, huh? There was a language there, you know, and the last speaker died in 1979, I believe. Last native speaker. It is one of the six Celtic languages which we remember in the Isles of Britain. And on that island, there is a mountain called the Snæfell. Sure, it's the Snæfell. And here's what they say about the Snæfell. From the top of the Snæfell, on a clear day, you can see the six kingdoms. England to the east, Wales to the south, Ireland to the west, Scotland to the north, man beneath your feet, and heaven above. The six sacred directions. And there you were. This is the ancient order of affairs, which the whole world once shared. It is indeed not only grandmother, grandfather, but greatest grandmother and greatest grandfather. It's a memory that our ancestors were a lot smarter than we are. We have a notion that the world has come out of darkness into light, but actually, it has come out of light into darkness, and it's time to go back again. Ancient order of affairs is actually an ancient understanding of the ancient order of affairs. It's on the back of the dollar bill. And as the motto of the United States, and it was taken from the Iroquois, and whose central place is Lake Erie, called Gichigumi. And here is what Longfellow says of it. Speaking of daughters of the moon. Yes? Nikomis is Iroquois for daughter of the moon. Hiawatha is the solar hero of the Iroquois nation. There's always a solar hero. Each of us is the solar hero. And each of us comes from the wisdom of grandmother and grandfather. And here is what Longfellow says. By the shores of Gichigumi, by the shining Big Sea waters, stood the wigwam of Nikomis, daughter of the moon. Nikomis. Wigwam. It's a cone. If you've never lived in a teepee, as we call it, or a wigwam, perhaps you've never really lived on the earth. To sleep on the earth and watch the stars move by night is the holiest of ceremonies. It is remembered by the willow tree, willow guard by pale moonlight. The willow tree, curiously, is the source of salicylic acid, aspirin. And the willow tree, the inner scrapings of the bark of the willow tree, will cure your headache better than Bayer aspirin. Willow tree, willow guard by pale moonlight. When you build a sweat lodge, you build a dome of heaven. And in this inverted bowl we call the sky, whereunder crawling, whereunder crawling cooped, we live and die. That's the Rubaiyat of Umar Khayyam. And everything's moving. Spin, spin, spin. And there is great depth of space between the stars, it seems. If you're an astronomer, though, you can't hardly find any spaces between the stars. It's one massive, sparkling field of diamonds everywhere. Sukkah, Sukkoth. This is spring equinox. Sukkoth is fall equinox. But I have a better name than equinox. Equinox is too cold for me. Rather, this is the night of equal day. And in the fall, there is the day of equal night. Tells you what it is, doesn't it? And as was said before on the Earth Day proclamation we heard read here, as I understand it, on this day and this night, when the day and night are equal, the night and the day are equal over all the earth. Did you know that? Other than implicitly? It took me 70 years to find that out. I wouldn't be surprised if it's taken you a while too. And the reason is that it's about life. And there's a word, ubiquity. Ubiquity means everywhere. The ubiquity of life. Life is everywhere. There is nothing that is not life, you see. We have come into an age of darkness, thinking that some things are not alive. In fact, thinking that most things are not alive. Turtle Islanders, as we call the native peoples of this island of the Western Hemisphere, never lost that knowledge, as we have. For them, everything is our sister or our brother. Nothing is a thing. Everything is people. Brothers and sisters everywhere. What a remarkable change. How overwhelming, though. Where can you walk without stepping on life? What can you eat without eating a living thing? Of course, Siddhartha the Buddha says the same thing. Siddhartha gives us a word, sentient being. Sentient being. I've made up a little parody of a conversation with God. Now, of course, every conversation with God must be a comic routine, because otherwise you'd take it too seriously. I think that the divinity is the source, most of all, of a sense of humor. Yeah? Being the source of all things, I think this is the most precious of the gifts. The lightness of heart. The saying, lightness of heart is the fountain of youth and the doorway of eternal life. Nothing is more serious than lightness of heart. And nothing is more frivolous than unrelieved sorrow. What a strange message that is. In a world whose religions have told us that you must treasure your sorrow, and you must be sorry all the time for all the bad things you have done, and that you are such a bad person and so evil that you have killed Jesus on the cross, who died for your sins, you poor wretch. What a terrible idea. How stupid. Do you believe that Jesus Christ died on the cross for your sins? I hope not. That's so depressing. And besides, it just isn't true anyway. Look in the Bible, if you will, to see where Jesus said that he was going to die on the cross for your sins. And you won't find it. It's not there. Who said it then? Paul of Tarsus made it up. No master would ever die for your sins. What a useless thing to do. Nobody needs to die for your sin, including you. Sin is not what the world's about. The world is about ecstasy. Let us see just how much it is about ecstasy. You know what ecstasy is? It's the love of God. What? Well, conversation with God. One day God spoke to me and said, "You know what the love of God is, don't you?" Well, I said, "No, not exactly." And God said to me, "Well, I have made every sentient being in the universe capable of ecstasy. And there are no non-sentient beings." Huh? Everything is capable of ecstasy? Even plastic? Why, of course, at some level. Everything is capable of ecstasy, and that's the love of God. Why, yes. What else would it be? Pretty simple. Hard to find a hole in that argument. But such an outrageous idea. Everything is capable of ecstasy. Well, what is love then? Love is the ecstasy of bonding between spirits. Hello? What? But everything's made of spirit? Yes. You mean I can bond with anything? Yes. And you can enjoy it too. And that's what we're here to do, you see. Oh, but there are so many beings. Won't I get confused? No. Take every opportunity to bond with other beings. I bonded with a squirrel when I came in here. I hadn't seen one of those lovely little squirrels that we have around this part of the country for many years. They had a big plague that wiped them out sometime way back. Palo Alto used to be alive with all of these lovely squirrels. And you know how they are? They go along the branch of the tree and they go... They dance so beautifully that they fly. And they're sinusoidal. And they're so innocent. I like to bond with squirrels. I want my spirit to do what their spirit does. Yes? And maybe they have something to teach me. And bonding is the way to learn. Because by bonding, The power that is wakened in the one you bond with is wakened in you. Is that love then? Why, yes. What else would it be? And then there is this mysterious power we call gravity. And this mysterious notion we call grace. What is gravity? Well, it's an attraction between, perceived attraction between material things like planets and people and apples and the earth. You know? Mysterious. Gravity is so mysterious that nobody's figured out what it is yet. But we see the effects of it everywhere, don't we? Gravity is a power of attraction, isn't it? What is grace? Grace is a power of attraction too. Grace is the power that draws one spirit to another spirit. And gravity is a power that draws one body to another body. But bodies are all made of spirit, and so grace and gravity are the same thing. And the effect of grace and gravity is bonding. You know what that is? It's religion. We need to define almost all of our words over again. We have lost their original meaning. This is one project I'm about to engage on, is to provide a glossary of the truth of life. To re-examine the words we use every day and find out how far they have moved from what they were made to mean. Religion is probably the best example of all. Religion has become a swear word and a reason to fight, hasn't it? My religion is better than your religion, and if you don't believe my religion, you're going to hell, and the heck with you. I'm out of here, I think I'll kill you, just to make sure that you don't get in my way again. Religious warfare is the nature of all warfare. And a religion is an organization and a set of beliefs and a bunch of commandments and a bunch of solar heroes like Jesus or Buddha. But Buddhism isn't a religion, so we'll leave that out for now. What does religion mean? Well, it's a Latin word, and it comes from lego. Ligo, ligare, ligavi, ligatus. Ligo, I form a bond. Ligare, to form a bond. Ligavi, I have formed a bond. Ligatus, a bond has been formed. Religo means to reform a bond. Religion is about reforming bonds. But love is the ecstasy of bonding. Then religion is about love, or love is about religion. Yes, of course. Grace and gravity are the same thing. Those are the forces which cause you to bond. So that's religion too. Yes. The mystery of the universe and its shapes, and its forms, and its functions has always been the same. Our religions have changed all the time, but the universe hasn't changed. What does the word universe mean? Verso, spin. Unus, one. One big spin. is what universe means. And that's exactly what it is. It's one big spin. Spinning is one of those forces, like grace and gravity, which makes the universe look the way it looks and act the way it acts. We're all walking around inside of a spinning vortex of energy that fits very nicely in a teepee. And when we get together in a big group like this, all our little vortexes join together, even if we don't know about it, and make one great big one over us, reaching between earth and heaven. And when that vortex goes up, it draws another one down. And everything in the world is doing that, individually and collectively. The Oivei, what is the universe? They asked the rabbi. Rebbe, what is the universe? It's a bagel. New York Times, a week ago, had a whole page with pictures from outer space, of outer space, in green. Said, the universe is a donut. You know the difference between a donut and a bagel? Well, it's a sugar crust. Otherwise, it's all the same. Pardon?
Cream cheese.
Cream cheese. Bagels and lox bagels and cream cheese. Yes. Now, that shape of the donut is the shape of the earth. It's the shape of the planet. And you can see it in pictures of the magnetic field. It's always a donut. You ever notice that? It's the aura of the earth. It's a donut. The earth is not a sphere. It's a donut with the poles collapsed. So the hole in the middle is full of stuff. But there's a hole right through the middle of the earth. We've always known that somehow. And there is. Because every star and every planet is a bagel. And the galaxy is a bagel too. And so is every atom in your body a bagel. It's the structure of everything our senses can reach and everything they cannot reach. Daughter of the moon, Nikomis. Start being a bagel hunter. Look around and see if you can see the function moving in the world around you. Right? Watch the wind. A spiritual person is one who watches the wind. Watch the storms come in. See how they spin. Look at them on the weather report. Only the storms go in the northern hemisphere. They go counterclockwise. Southern hemisphere, they go clockwise. When you cross the equator, they used to throw you in the ocean to stop your aura from spinning in the clockwise direction, so that when you entered the southern hemisphere, it could take up going the other way. Because if your aura gets reversed, you feel terrible and you get sick. You want to see how to fix a headache? A headache's when your aura slows down or when it reverses. migraine, it's reversed and going fast. You just remember the sun. Sunwise circle. Clockwise, we call it. Don't call it clockwise anymore. Call it sunwise. Just take your head and take your arm and just go like this. It's fun. Sounds like something for kindergarten, guys. And it is. Tell little kids like this and they go doing it to each other, you know? Spin, spin, spin. Power of innocence. The profundity of the simple. Nothing is more mysterious than the simple. Something is simple, you can't break it in parts. That's why it's simple. And your mind can't divide it up anymore. Now you think, wherefore, you understand it because you can't divide it anymore. Well, it's only that that's where you stop understanding it, where you can't divide it anymore. That's it. Now, there are three forms to this vortex. And I apologize, because this is so mathematical that it almost appeals only to the left brain. It's so precise and mathematical that people say, oh, too much for me. Hold on. Let's try. The primary force is just a dot. Secondary force is a straight line. Tertiary force is curvature. Watch that. Suppose you do two of those. Relativity. There's no relationship, Einstein says, between straight lines. But there is relationship between circles. The entire material universe emerges from the fact that energy goes in circles. And this is a great mystery. Why it does that. But not only does it come, the Kabbalah says it manifests, comes out of the etheric being, where there is no space-time. Utterly impossible to conceive. A spaceless, timeless, pre-universal universe. Yeah. You can't think about it. Think about it anyway. Let it drive you crazy if you want. Don't give up, because this etheric, non-spatial, non-temporal, pre-universal universe is what we have stumblingly called God. That existent which is non-existent. That essence which is the essence of essence. That primordial source of the flow we call life and being. Never stops moving. It's like Quetzalcoatl, but it's also like Tezcatlipoca. Though never changing, it is the source of all change. Though never moving, it is the source of all motion. Though never breathing, it is the source of all breath. Inconceivable, beyond any description by a term. It is a dimension where we think we cannot work, but we can. We have the equipment. We have a remarkable instrument in our head which can move in that timeless, spaceless dimension with great accuracy. And this age of darkness is an age in which we've forgotten how to do that. That's why it's an age of darkness. An age of light is when you use your equipment to move equally well in both realms, both the unmanifested and the manifested. Your left brain works in this one. Your right brain works in the other. Now, both of them can work both places, but it's just a matter of development, you see. Your right brain comprehends the essence. Your left brain deals with the existence. Your right brain deals with origin, and your left brain with destiny. But they can each do both. And listen to what Lao Tzu said about them. All Lao Tzu is always humorous, you know. All masters are always humorous. Because without lightness of heart, there is no wisdom. So, left brain is concerned for origin of universe, of what it may be composed, and how to control it. Right brain is concerned for happiness and how it may be obtained. Corpus callosum is bridge between them, bridge of size over troubled water, in which dwells dragon of suffering. That's an actual description of function there. Ask any brain surgeon. This is exactly what it is. Read Leonard Schlein, The Alphabet versus the Goddess. We should be concerned about these things because we can, but mostly because by learning about them, the barriers to our happiness are removed. And we've begun to understand things we only remotely thought of, like immortality. Do you want to see what a thing has been done? I say to you, human remains. And what do you think? A dead body. Right? Wrong. That isn't what remains. What remains of you is your spirit, which is forever. Your body goes away. Your spirit doesn't. Manio means I remain. Manes is the spirit of an ancestor who remains available for you to call upon her or him for coming to visit you. El Día de los Muertos, Day of the Dead in Mexico, is a remnant of the ancient native practice of the native people of this land who walked with their ancestors regularly. In Chinese, there are even characters for this. It says, descendant asking spirit of ancestor to personate her or him. Second character, spirit of ancestor personating descendant. personate? It's not a word. Well, we make it up. Because we forgot completely so much what this is, we even forgot the word. Personate does not mean possess. You see, the native peoples of this continent were very, very different from those people who landed here. Their organization of their society was not like ours at all. It was organized the way the world was before the Age of Darkness. Founding fathers of the United States, the big founding father, you know, is Benjamin Franklin. You know that? And he was a Quaker. Why did they call him a Quaker? Why do they call Quakers Quakers? Quakers remember the power of spirit in a way that no other white man's religion I know of remembers. Ecstasy is about Quakers. Quakers are about ecstasy. And when you get full of ecstasy to the point where you can't stand it anymore, you begin to shake. Don't you? Oh, confess, right? Yeah. And Quakers practice meeting together in such a way that everybody begins to quake with the ecstasy of spiritual union. It's an empowerment gathering where everybody links together and becomes one being in the ecstasy of union. This was what all the native peoples of the world did. The ecstasy of their union was so great that they conceived themselves primarily not as individuals at all, but only as cells of a body. And that the ecstasy was one thing. And what was that one thing? The nation. Carl Jung tells us that the progress of, quote, Western civilization has been the development of individuation. If you've studied Jung, you know that word. Individuation. What does individuation mean? It means the process of discovering yourself as an individual. We are so individuated in this society that we can't do anything but fight with it, one another as to who's better. Whereas in an individuated society, the idea of being better than somebody else never occurs to anyone. Talk about peace. And when Americus Vespucius and Columbus and all those other funny guys came to this continent, they didn't understand at all what they were dealing with. But the one thing they knew they had to do was get rid of it as fast as possible, because it was such a threat to the way they viewed the world that it must be evil. So the only good Indian was a dead Indian, and they killed him as fast as they could. Not because they were afraid of them in a physical way, but they were afraid of them in a spiritual way, because they asked them to do something that they had forgotten how to do. Christianity is a horror. Missionaries are an abomination. Why? Well, first of all, Jesus never started it. Was there Jesus? Probably. But the one described in the New Testament is not the right one. You'd have to have come to America to find the right one. Quetzalcoatl, perhaps. There probably was someone wandering around like that. Siddhartha the Buddha was awfully close to being a Native American. Buddhism's insight into the way of being is a memory of how the world was. And if Siddhartha had come to America, he wouldn't have had anything to do, because everybody was already doing what he was saying. Is this too radical for you? Too many roots? Well, it's all about innocence and joy and spinning and dancing and feeling one with the people around you. It's all about paradise, guys. That's paradise, isn't it? Ancient order of affairs. Listen to what the back of the dollar bill says. Benjamin Franklin put it there, right? And this is what he intended to say. And they altered it so it wouldn't quite, you could look at it and not see it. Masters of deceit, take the truth and twist it to state it in a way that will get you to do what they want instead of helping you be free. The conspiracy is a vast effort to enslave the world for the greed of a few. That's what it is. It's the Roman Empire. It's every empire that ever was. It's like that. And we are all slaves here, because that's all we've ever known from our religion. Islam and Christianity and Judaism are slave religions. What do I mean? Well, what do they call their gatherings? Worship services. Don't they? Have you been to services this year, today? Service is what a slave does, isn't it? A servant. The word servant and the word slave are identical, actually. The one just looks a little worse than the other. Your purpose in life is to serve the well-being of another, not you. That's slaves. It's servants if there's some degree of freedom in it, and a slave if there's none. But essentially, it's the same thing. Wisdom tells you, you should not live to serve others. But you should learn to discover that you gain your own happiness by causing other people to be happy. That's not serving someone. That's enjoying life together. And that's what we should be doing. Anyway, here's what the conspiracy has made the words in the back of the dollar bill mean, or bill mean. Anuit cept, on Latin, give it to you Latin. Want to hear it? Anuit ceptis, novus ordo seclorum, e pluribus unum, in God we trust. Counterclockwise. Now, anuit, to nod with approval. Ceptis, things begun. Novus ordo seclorum, new order of affairs. E pluribus unum, out of many one. In God we trust is obvious. And so here's what it would mean if you go to the trouble to translate in sequence. It's pretty good, but not good enough. And here's the way it goes. For God has nodded with approval upon the things we have begun, a new order of affairs, that out of many should be one, in order that in God we may trust. That's pretty good, but it's not right. New order of affairs isn't what we need. We need the old one. And the nodding of the head is not a good idea for the divinity. Breathing is better. So watch this. In Chinese, it's breathing. The sinusoidal. Spiritual kind of thing. And the word spiro means to breathe. The word spiral comes from the word to breathe. For the divinity breathes with approval upon the things we have begun, a renewal of the ancient order of affairs, that out of many should be one, in order that in the divinity and one another we may forever trust. You know, you should think about that a lot. Trust is how to build a nation, isn't it? How much of that do we have today? How much do we trust the federal government and the IRS? How much do we trust the state of California and the police? How much do we trust our politicians and our legislators? How much do we trust each other? Pretty selective about that, aren't we? In general, trust is not the first thing with most of the people we know, is it? In a true nation, it's ubiquitous. In a true nation, everyone trusts everyone else as if they were themselves. And there's this saying, I am you, adopt me. That's the kind of world that Columbus found here. There were exceptions, of course, but not many. That's the world that the universe and the divinity has made us in the image of. And that's something we can do. Trust. Individuation is inevitably a loss of trust after a while. And the trust comes when you start pressing your advantage over the people around you. The absence of trust is greed. Buddha says, greed is the mother and father of all vices. I wish that we had that in the Bible. We don't. The great crime is greed. And greed undermines trust in a second. Both by the greedy person and the one ripped off. America is totally involved with greed today. Greed is a virtue, they say. That's what Milken said, wasn't it? Greed is a virtue, murder is not a crime, and the end justifies the means. The only good Indian is a dead Indian. Greed, greed, greed. Me, me, me. I remember a story that was told to me about France, they say. And a woman who had never done a good thing in her life. Now that's quite impossible, but nonetheless. The story is she never did a good thing. And one day she was sitting out in the backyard peeling a leek. And a beggar came and begged to have the leek because he was starving. And without thinking, she threw the leek over the fence. The beggar ate it and went away happy. Well, she died and went to hell, of course. And while she was down there burning and suffering away with all the other people in hell, two angels looked down through the hole in the roof of hell and saw her suffering there and took pity on her and said, let's look in the book and see if she ever did a good thing in her life. So they look in the book and they find the leek. So they take the leek out of the book and put it on a string and lower it to her. Now, of course, being a spirit, she's weightless. And no amount of weight would break the string. And she grabs the leek, and they're drawing her up to the hole into heaven. But all the other damned souls see her and grab hold of her, and they are pulling up this great teepee of souls toward heaven. And she looks and sees all of these millions of souls being dragged out of hell with her and immediately says, mine! And the string breaks and they all fall back into hell. Now that's a good story. Isn't it? Mine! Arr! That's the ultimate conservatism, guys. A liberal, and we're all both of these, so let's not pretend.